thirsty, let them come to me.
The Holy Gospel is found in the book of the Acts of the Apostles. The apostles returned to Jerusalem from the Mount of Olives, a mere Sabbath's walk away. Entering the city, they went to the upstairs room where they were staying. Peter, John, James, and Andrew, Philip, Thomas, Bartholomew, and Matthew, James ben Alphaeus, Simon, a member of the Zealot sect, and Judah ben Jacob. Also in their company were some of the women who followed Jesus, his mother Mary, and some of Jesus' sisters and brothers. With one mind, they devoted themselves to constant prayer. When the day of Pentecost arrived, they all met in one room. Suddenly, they heard what sounded like a violent rushing wind from heaven. The noise filled the entire house in which they were sitting. Something appeared to them that seemed like tongues of fire. These separated and came to rest on the head of each one. They were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as she enabled them. Now there were devout people living in Jerusalem from every nation under heaven, and at this sound they all assembled, but they were bewildered to hear their native languages being spoken. They were amazed and astonished. Surely all these people speaking are Galileans. How does it happen that each of us hears these words in our native tongue? We are Parthians, Medes, Elamites, people from Mesopotamia, Judea, Cappadocia, Pontus, and Asia, Phrygia, Pamphylia, Egypt, and the parts of Libya around Cyrene, as well as visitors from Rome, all Jews or converts to Judaism, Cretans and Arabs too. We hear them preaching, even in our own language, about the marvels of God. All were amazed and disturbed. They asked each other, "What does this mean?" But others said mockingly, "They're drunk. Too much new wine." Then Peter stood up with the 11 and addressed the crowd. "Women and men of Judea, and all you who live in Jerusalem, listen to what I have to say. These people are not drunk as you think. It's only 9 o'clock in the morning. No, it's what Joel the prophet spoke of. In the days to come, I will pour out my spirit on all humankind. Your daughters and sons will prophesy. Your young people will see visions, and your elders will dream dreams. Even on the most insignificant of my people, both women and men, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. And I will display wonders in the heavens above and signs on the earth below, blood, fire, and billowing smoke. The sun will be turned into darkness, and the moon will become blood before the coming of the great and sublime day of our God. And all who call upon the name of our God will be saved." Here ends the reading. The story of Pentecost is not an historical account of what happened in the days immediately after the crucifixion of Jesus. The story of Pentecost is an attempt by an unknown writer, a storyteller we know as Luke, who was trying to make sense of a human phenomenon. He was doing that at the end of the first century, some 70 years after the life of Jesus. And so this story evokes in me other stories that attempt to explain human phenomenon. So maybe it's because it's Picnic Sunday, maybe it's because it was a long, hard, cold winter. But this weekend, actually maybe it's because I'm on a diet, this weekend I've been thinking a lot about ice cream. A lot about ice cream. So I want to tell you an historical account, my own history. When I was a very little girl, one of my earliest memories, all the way back to Belfast, my granddad, who was a figure who was larger than life. I was a little bit afraid of him, but absolutely adored him and thought he was the wisest man in all the world, except, of course, for my father, who was wise but fun. Granddad was not any fun at all. He was a very scary man. But he also had this little weakness, ice cream. And one of my earliest memories is of my granddad holding my hand, which was quite a wonderful feeling when your granddad is holding your hand. And in those days, he wouldn't go out without a suit and a tie and his best brogues, you know. And there we go, off into town with my granddad. What could be better? Well, let me tell you what could be better. Ice cream. We went for ice cream. And there's something about ice cream that just, it's universal. Everybody loves ice cream. If you don't trust ice cream, I'm not entirely sure I would trust you. Ice cream is a marvelous, marvelous thing. Anyway, my grandfather was transformed licking ice cream, because you can't be austere when you're licking ice cream. It was a wonderful experience. And when we'd finished our ice cream, he took me by the hand, and he very sternly said, "Don't tell your nanny." So he didn't want his wife to know that he'd taken his granddaughter for ice cream. A couple hours later, my nanny takes me by the hand. We go into town, you guessed it, for ice cream. It was wonderful, ice cream. It was great. It was a special kind of ice cream that I was reminded of this morning by my cousin in Belfast. They put a 99, it's called a 99, they put a Cadbury's Milk Flake chocolate bar in this wonderful ice cream, and that's what my nanny presented me with. We ate this ice cream with gusto. We had a terrific time. It was marvelous. She takes me by the hand, and on the way home, she says, "Now don't tell your granddad." Now, I've always wondered why the two of them would do such a thing. Did they not want one another to know that they took their granddaughter for ice cream? Were they hoping to get more ice cream? Or was it just too pleasurable to even discuss? I don't know, but as a little girl, it kind of made me wonder, why don't they want me to talk about it? Much later in life, the same kind of question would come up again about something far more mysterious than ice cream. When I got to seminary, it was made clear to me in all sorts of ways that the powers that be did not want me or any of my classmates to talk about our encounters with the divine. If we had any direct encounters with God or the Spirit, we got the message that we ought not talk about those experiences. What is it about Lutherans that makes us not want to talk about our encounters with the divine? If I or any of my classmates at seminary spoke of any direct contact with the divine, we would have immediately been suspected of having delusions. They'd probably go back to our psychological assessment and reevaluate us. I'm not talking about feeling a sense of call. It was perfectly acceptable for us to talk about feeling or having a sense that God was trying to tell you something. It was perfectly fine to talk about feeling a sense of call as long as you made it clear that you had some serious doubts about whether or not it was God who was actually calling you. I'm not sure if it was humility or fear or doubts that kept us from talking about the possibility of encounters with the one we were actually there to study. But we all kept mum, except for this one fellow, who claimed to actually hear God talking to him. He claimed to have encounters with God. And he was gone before the end of the first year. Processed by the seminary and the CTEL group, which examines candidates for ordination, he was deemed unsuitable for ordination. And that guy served as an example to all of us. If God shows up, keep it to yourself. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about faith or believing in God or feeling that God is somehow there. These things are expected of us. I'm talking about indescribable, unexplainable encounters with the reality that lies at the heart of all that is. I'm talking about mystical experiences. I'm talking about mystical encounters with the divine. Claiming that we had a mystical experience was not the way to make a career for yourself in our church. So I never spoke about my own mystical experiences. The first one happened when I was a child, when I didn't have the words to describe it or to deal with it. And yet, the memory of it is crystal clear. I was lying on the grass. I couldn't have been more than about 4 or 5 years old, around about the time I was having ice cream with my granddad. Lying in the grass, looking up at the sky, and something happened. Something I don't have words for. Something that let me know that I was connected to the sky, to the blades of grass, in a way that I can't even begin to describe. I think in some ways, my love of biographies when I was a child was an attempt to find out if anybody else had experienced this. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that I shouldn't tell anyone. And I knew that somebody out there somewhere must have had the same thing happen to them. It didn't happen again until I was 19 years old, and I was backpacking in Europe. And I went to Copenhagen, to the Carlsberg Glyptotek, and I came around the corner, and there was Van Gogh's painting of Saint Remy, and it took my breath away. And suddenly, the same thing began to happen. And I could feel, not see, feel every brush stroke. And I was connected to every brush stroke. My attempts to explain it now, and I've had many years to try and figure out how to explain it, pale in comparison to the actual experience. And I never told anyone. Because I read that this was called, by the psychologists, a dissociative state of being. And one too many of those, and you would be labeled. You wouldn't be considered healthy. So I never spoke of it. I tried to figure out what it was. And I wanted it to happen again so that I could be alert this time and kind of take notes in my head and figure out what it was. Didn't happen again until I was doing my clinical training, my third year at seminary, in the hospital, terrified. I'm not good in hospitals. And there I was in hospital. And I don't have words for this one at all. I was holding in my arms a stillborn baby. And it happened. There was darkness. An incredible darkness, a beautiful darkness, a darkness that I was connected to, a darkness that enfolded me and enfolded this child in ways that I cannot begin to describe. while later, about a year later, it happened again. I've spoken about it here before. I was standing before Niagara Falls, totally amazed by the force and the power of the water. And I caught a glimpse out of the corner of my eye of a tear on my lover's cheek. She rolls her eyes. I didn't tell her what was going on at the time. I was not there. And yet I was everywhere. And everywhere was in me. And there was no distance between me and whatever it is that lies at the heart of reality. There are moments when we are exposed to mystery. Mystery that we have come to call God. And in those moments, that mystery permeates our very being. And words fall away. We know in every fiber of our being that we are in the presence of mystery beyond our ability to comprehend or to describe. Images of fire, clouds, stars, light, colors, love, tenderness, fear, trembling, wonders, silence, awe. The words just don't capture it. So this is Pentecost. And today of all days, we should be able to, at the very least, talk about those mystic moments that we have encountered in our lives. And so I am going to do something that scares me a little. I'm going to ask you to stand up. Stand up. And we kind of conservative middle-class people, I'm going to trust that we have all had mystical experiences of some kind or another. And whether you label them mystic experiences or aha moments or moments of awe or moments where you were absolutely convinced that you were in the presence of something far greater than yourselves, we've all had them. So I'd like the spirit to dance around this sanctuary a little bit. Some of you got panicked because you heard the word dance, but it's going to be okay. Trust me on this one, okay? I hear the heavy sighs. Here we go. I knew this was dangerous when I thought about it in the wee hours of the night. So what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to find someone in this gathering, someone that you don't know very well or maybe don't know at all. And I'd like you to share one of those experiences with that other person. Now, if you're like me and you're an introvert and this terrifies you, feel free to find someone you know really well who doesn't terrify you so much. But let's see what happens. Nobody is going to be asked to repeat their story for the whole group. Right? I'm going to give you a few moments to just wander around the room and share your experience. Go for it.
Thank you.
invite you to finish up your stories and take a seat. It sounded a little bit like Pentecost in here. Not everybody might have been speaking the same language, but I trust that you understood some of the stories that you heard in ways that open you to the possibility of encounters, mystic encounters. I was saying to Rick that my initial reaction to any one of these encounters is always to try and figure out rationally what is happening. I even try to focus when I feel that beginning to happen so that I can remember it after it's over, and somehow that focus falls away. And maybe we're not supposed to be able to rationally explain such experiences. The 19th century philosopher Rudolf Otto described the reality we encounter in these strange, indescribable moments as mysterium tremendum et fascinam. Mysterious, tremendous, and fascinating. Mysterious because there are no words to adequately describe or explain the encounter, and we don't know when or if or how we'll ever have a similar experience again. Tremendous because the experiences cause us to tremble in fear at the awesome nature of the reality that we are encountering. And fascinating because we simply can't help but be drawn toward whatever it is that is happening. We want the encounter. We need it. We long to understand and to explain it. It is simply overwhelming, and it changes us in ways that take a lifetime to comprehend. I'm still unpacking that moment in the grass when I was about 4 years old. The spirit blows where she wills. May each of you know the mysterium tremendum et fascinam, that is, the one who lives and breathes in, with, through, and beyond us, now and forever. Amen.